Now, so here we go. So the story is like this. I want to discuss Parshas. What was this? Parshas. What, Avi?
I actually don't know.
Last week was a Yeshev.
Miketz.
Beautiful. Miketz and Vayigash Vayechi. Beautiful. So we're in Miketz this week, okay? What happens in this week's Parsha? The brothers go down to Egypt in order to what?
In order to get food.
In order to get food. Right. Now we know from the beginning of this week's Parsha that Yosef ascends to power. Because Paro has dreams. He has two dreams, which is really one dream. Skinny cows, or the fat cows, skinny cows. The big sheaves of wheat. The smaller stalks of wheat. And we know the skinny ones consume the larger ones. And Paro's bugging out about this, and he needs an interpreter. Right? And Yosef comes out. He's whisked out of jail to interpret the dreams. And Paro's, you know, enamored by Yosef. Yosef is placed as the Mishneh Lamelech, the number two to the king. Right? Second in command. The viceroy, I think, is the fancy arts for a word that people use. I've never heard that used. That word used in any other context. But either way, Yosef becomes the second in command in Egypt. Good. And we now we know the brothers are then sent down. Perek Membez, this is in the fourth Aliyah now. Vayar Yaakov, ki yeshever b'mitzrayim. Yaakov saw that there was sufficient food in Egypt. And he says to his sons, we need to go down basically. Redu shama, go down there. And get provisions, get food for us so that we can live, we can eat, we'll survive. Everybody with me so far? Good. So now comes the dramatic moment where the brothers come face to face with Yosef. However, only Yosef was aware. Meaning what? The brothers were not aware that it was Yosef standing in front of them, but Yosef recognized that it was the brothers in front of him. Is everybody with me on that?
He recognized their faces.
Ah, okay, good. Let's take a look at the psukim. I'm happy you said that actually, Aaron Tzvi, because the psukim say like this. We're in Pasuk Zion and Ches. Vayar Yosef es achiv, echav, excuse me, vayakirim. And he recognized them. Vayisnaker alehem, vayisnaker, the source of that word is nun chaf resh. Okay? Nun chaf resh. Same word as nachri, by the way. Okay? Same source as the word nachri, a non-Jew. Which means to be a stranger, right? He made himself strange to them. Vidabir itam kashos, he spoke to them harshly. In a strong way. And he said to them, May ayin basem, where are you coming from? Vayomru. And they said back, Meretz Kanan, Lishbar Ochel. We came from Eretz Kanan. We came from Israel to Lishbar Ochel to buy food. Vayakir Yosef Achav, Esachav. Yosef recognized his brothers, Vahim Lohi Kiruhu. So the psukim point out two things. Or excuse me, the psukim repeat itself. Right, it already said, Vayar Yosef Esachav. Yosef saw his brothers. Vayakirim, and he recognized them. And then again, in Pasuk Ches, it says that he recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. So it happens to be, I saw last night, Rav Sarutzkin has the same horror as Aaron Tzvi. He says, maybe he was trying to, what would you say?
Well,
he was able to identify them. How was he able to identify him? So in two ways, and that's why he says Vayakir twice. He recognized their faces, and he recognized their voices. And Rav Sarutzkin says, based on the Gemara, you have to be able to really know the person. You have to be able to see their face. You have to hear their voice. And there are lots of different ways to recognizing or identifying a person, let's say. Fine. I want to share three ideas, though. The first idea is as follows. Let's say Rav Soloveitchik first, okay? Rav Soloveitchik says the following idea. Again, he notes this double lashon of Vayakir and Vayakir. And he says the following. Why was it that the Torah repeats itself? So he says, because Yosef recognized his brothers twice. What's that mean, he recognized them twice? So Soloveitchik says that at first glance, right when Yosef saw his brothers, all of a sudden, this, I don't say pent up, but let's say this suppressed anger began to resurface. He saw his brothers, he saw these judgmental, quick-tempered, ruthless, mean older brothers. And all of a sudden, he like clenched his fists. And again, that anger, that aggression resurfaced. You guys with me on this? So he says like this. All the pain was reawakened. But then he looked at them again. There was a second Vayakir. And what did he see? In Rav Soloveitchik's words, he looked at their faces and realized they changed, that they had softened. They had this, you know, weary, tired, depressed look on their face. He saw that they lacked inner peace. And he said that these 10 guys standing in front of him were not the same people who had sold him. But what's the kicker here, Chevra? The brothers didn't realize that they changed. The brothers didn't realize that they became different people over the past several years. And Rav Soloveitchik says that very often a Baal Tshuva, someone who undergoes a certain change, a growth period in life, very often we don't even recognize that we grow. You know, when guys are in yeshiva for the year, so if they're all in the same yeshiva, it's very difficult to know how you're growing and how you're progressing, because everybody's kind of on the same trajectory. That's why sometimes the summer is so beneficial, when you step away from your regular routine, and you're able to see, like, you know, where am I holding? What have I accomplished over the past? Or not even like a summer, but just to do cheshbon and nefesh, just to think about your midos and your learning and just your overall personality. And how have we grown to be able to take a step away from things and to recognize that. But again, the brothers never did that. And they were never able to understand how they grew and how they changed and how they developed. And Yosef took it upon himself to what? To make sure that they understood this. He wanted to bring this transformation that the brothers underwent, he wanted to bring it to their attention. And I think for us, there are people in our lives who push us. But I think, what did Yosef do to his brothers? He began to speak to them harshly. He said, I don't believe you. He took Shimon into jail. He said, go bring down Binyamin. Right? And he hid stuff in the bags. He was doing all these things. Why? He was challenging the brothers. Because very often, when our backs are up against the wall, when we feel, or when we face, I should say, a certain amount of pressure, that's when our real essence comes forward. When people are stressed out, when your back's up against the wall, then the real us sometimes comes forth. And Yosef was pushing the brothers to see what they're made of. Are they going to talk in a kind way to each other? Are they going to fight with each other? Are they going to argue with each other? He wanted to bring it to their attention that they're different. And I think in life, we have people, hold on one second, we have people in our lives who want to bring out the best in you. Right? We just started this initiative in the school, the JUMP initiative that's fighting apathy in our own Avodas Hashem. And I think you have people in your lives, people who surround you, whether it's teachers, whether it's Rebbeim, whether it's parents, whether it's siblings, it could be even friends, and I would say even ourselves, who have to be able to push us. Right? They say certain things to us, and if we look at it in a vacuum, oh, they could be mean, they could be annoying, they could be saying things that, you know, they don't get me, but sometimes they do get you, and sometimes they have a different perspective, and they see what you're capable of, and sometimes we're so stuck in our own way of thinking that we begin to lose sight of what we're really able to accomplish. I'll just give you one story to bring home this point. When I was your age, I think I was in 11th grade, I was going into 12th grade, I went to NCSY Cole for the summer. It was my second summer there, and we went up to Tveria. We took a trip, we went on the water by the Kinneret, I think it was. Whatever it was, banana boating, swimming, whatever. Maybe a hike, and afterwards, we got to the buses. Before we boarded the buses, we went to Davi Mincha. So we all got off the bus, we were about to Davi Mincha. And they had announced, you know, you should really put your pants on for davening. Right? Everyone was wearing shorts at the beginning, so everyone take out your sweatpants or whatever, your track pants, and just throw them on over your shorts, and we'll Davi Mincha. It was more appropriate to daven in pants. And most of the guys didn't do that. I have like a memory of a lot of guys not wearing pants. There were, for sure, some guys, and there were also a lot of guys not. I remember there was a staff member. It wasn't my counselor. I don't even think he was a counselor. I think he was like a sports staff guy. His name was Zevi. I don't want to say his last name. But I remember it so clearly. He came over to me. He's like, Stromer, you should really put pants on. And I was like, Zevi, come on. Like, there are like 24 guys not wearing pants. Why are you saying it to me? And he said, he's like, because I know you can. And he walked away. And I think about that a lot. Meaning he saw something in me. He saw me daven throughout the summer. Now, was I good at davening? Probably not. I'm still not so good at davening. But he said, he saw something in me. He said, I know you have the potential. I know you can. And he was challenging me. And sometimes when people say things to us in a challenging way, we're so quick to say, like, they're so mean, they're so judgmental, they're so this, they're so that. I think we need to pause for a second and think that maybe they're really looking out for us. Maybe they see something in me that I don't necessarily see. And we need to do a little bit of soul searching. We need to look inside. And I think that's what Yosef says for Soloveitchik. That's what Yosef decided to do. Because he recognized that the brothers changed, but the brothers were not aware of their own transformation. They didn't know who they were. And Yosef needed to bring that about. And I think we have people in our lives who do that for us. And we have to be sensitive to that. We have to recognize that they're not being mean. They're not challenging us for the sake of challenging us. They're not being mean for the sake of being mean. But they're pushing us because they see tremendous potential in each and every one of us. And I think that's important to think about. That's idea number one from Soloveitchik. Idea number two is a fascinating idea from Rabbi Lam. Rabbi Lam was a Rav on the Upper West Side in New York. He was also the chancellor at YU. And he says the following thought. This is my Hanukkah present from my parents, so I'm putting it to use. I figure we gotta use it the first week, you know what I'm saying? So he says the following idea. We saw the Gemara, and we spoke about the Gemara a little bit. Gemara on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis and Shabbos, which discusses all about the candles. all about Ner Chanukah. So we focused on the Gemara of Mai Chanukah, but we're familiar with the Gemara, the Machlokes. We don't like to say the word a famous Gemara in this class or a famous Rashi, but I'm pretty confident it is a famous Gemara with regards to how we light the Chanukah candles. How do we light the Chanukah lift? Do we go 1 to 8 or 8 to 1? Beis Hillel says we go 1 to 8. Beis Shammai says we go from 8 to 1. And I think everybody goes like Beis
Hillel,
very good, except for my son. My son has lit in basically 8 candles every single night throughout Chanukah, at night and in the morning. Take him out of the crib. He says, Abba, gotta light candles. I'm like, when it gets dark out? He's like, no, right now. I said, okay, fine. But he's very makbid. He started lighting 8, right? Beis Hillel says the reason is, Ma'al b'kodesh ve'im oridin. You can only go up. So my son started like Beis Shammai, but he holds of Beis Hillel too. So once he started lighting 8, he'll only light 8. He's very firm. It's all a joke, guys. Okay, fine. Anyway, no one needs to laugh. Anyway, the story is like this. He says something amazing. Let's understand the miracle. He quotes the Abderav, who wrote the Sefer, the Ohev Yisrael. Every single week, he always darshaned. He always spoke about Avas Yisrael. He's an incredible lover of Jews. And he says the following idea. Think about the first menorah that the Chashmonaim lit. Right? Think about the miracle. Every single day, right? I think, was it this class where I gave you guys the assignment? Right? There's also a well-known question about Chanukah. Why is it that we celebrate 8 days if the miracle was only 7 days? Why? Because they had enough light for
one
night. So the next 7 nights were really miraculous. The first night wasn't. So there are many answers to that question. One answer, the reason of why I think one of the girls presented in class the other day, why is it that we need to get to the 8th day? Because it takes that long to produce Shemen Zayis Zach. And that's what they wanted to use, the pure refined oil for the Beis HaMikdash, for the menorah. So check this out. With each successive day that the flame continued to be lit, right, the miracle seemed greater and greater. Meaning they knew they only had enough for one day, right? Everybody with me on this? And they knew they needed to get to the 8th day. Which means every single day that the flame continued to last, it was unbelievable in their eyes. Wow, it's so much more miraculous. Right? The 3rd, 4th, 5th day, on the 8th day, they're like, holy moly, this is the most amazing miracle we've ever witnessed. But think about it the other way. Meaning the miracle, you can also say, took place the exact opposite. Meaning if only a drop of oil was left after the first day, writes Rabbi Lamb, and it had to support 8 days worth of miracles. Right? So they only had enough for one day. They had to get to the 8th day. What does that mean? The 2nd day, the oil had to support how many more days after that? Only 6 more days. Meaning as you went on, you could perceive the miracle as less miraculous and less amazing. Is everybody with me on this? This is like an amazing distinction. And on the 8th day, when the light was still there, the miracle was still occurring, all they needed was one more day. That's it. Therefore, the miracle was quantitatively much smaller than the first day, when it had to stretch for how long? The full 8 days of Chanukah. So hence, Beis Shammai, how do they understand it? They go based on the reality of the miracle. Beis Shammai goes 8 to 1, because 8 nights, the first night of Chanukah, they light 8, because that was the greatest miracle. But by the 7th night, how much more do they need the oil to stay lit?
Only one more day.
What did I say? I don't even remember the example I gave.
On
the first night, they need it for another 7 days. But on the 6th night, it's only another 2 days. Right? So as the days continue, the miracle is smaller and smaller and smaller. Whereas Beis Hillel, it follows not just the reality of the miracle, but the awareness of the miracle. The fact that it's still going. Right? When your phone's on 1% and it lasts for an hour, you're blown away. Right? You with me on that? So there's a discrepancy, check this out, between the facts of the miracle and how we perceive them. This is an amazing understanding of the Machlokas, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. According to Beis Shammai, it's all about the reality of the miracle, right? Whereas Beis Hillel, it's an awareness of the miracle. In other words, there's a discrepancy, as Rabbi Lamb writes, between the facts of the miracle and the perception of them, between reality and appearance. The miracles of Jewish survival and redemption are paradoxically most obvious when they are least effective and least apparent when they are most profounding and far-reaching. Sometimes the greatest miracles are happening and we don't even notice. Right? When do we realize a miracle? Generally speaking, it's only after the fact. Hindsight 2020, we can look back and say that was unbelievable. The milchama, which was the Iker Nes of Chanukah, was the most unbelievable miracle. Yet what? We only really internalize that with the Nes Pach Shemen. Sometimes you only recognize the Nes after it happens. So says Rabbi Lame, how does this connect? Again, it's Zos Chanukah, it's the last day of Chanukah, the eighth day. Let's hold on to it a little bit more. How does this idea connect to the Parsha? So Rabbi Lame beautifully says, Yosef recognized the brothers, and the brothers didn't recognize him. What does that mean? So he says, Yosef was someone who had been thrown in a pit, left for dead, then sold to a foreign land, schlepped down to Egypt. Then he was thrown into jail, right? Given to Potiphar. Then Asia's Potiphar, thrown into jail. Saramashkim, Sarofim, swept out of jail, right? He has these crazy ups and downs. He's far away from home. He's in a foreign land. He doesn't speak the language. He's totally alone. Yet, from the depths of a hell, from the depths of such misery, what happens? He's swept up. Now he's the viceroy. He's the Mishlei Melech. He's second in command. Are you with me here? And now he's able to look back on it all and understand that Hashem had his hand in this the entire time. Yosef recognized, but the brothers were on the opposite spectrum right now. They were experiencing famine. They were experiencing, you know, issues of fidelity towards their father. Were they being honest or not? Now they were struggling with Binyamin, right? Things looked terrible for them. Yosef recognized them, says Rabbi Lam. Having come through the same experience, he understood what they were going through. And he understood too that their difficulties were their prelude to their salvation. He even tells them later on, Hashem sent me here. Hashem prepared this way so that you guys would have food. I'm here so that you guys can survive and get food. Yosef was able to say that because he had gone through a similar experience. And now he's on top. He recognizes Hashem's hand in everything. Whereas what? The brothers were still in the darkness. They didn't recognize it. Not having undergone this tremendous experience, as Yosef had already done, they could not appreciate the situation. They cannot know what he knew. This is the Yisod of Chanukah, and this is the Yisod of this week's Parsha. That sometimes when we're experiencing miracles, we don't appreciate them. Hindsight is 20/20, and we know the Chanukah candles shed light on not just the Ner, the Nes Pach Shem, but also on the Nes Milchama. And as we've been saying probably every single day of Yom Tov so far, right? Ein lanu reshus lishtamesh bahem ela lirosam bilvad. We don't use the candles, we look at them, we're supposed to appreciate them. Sha'asa nisim lavosinu bayamim ahem and bazman ezem. Hashem is constantly and continuously performing miracles for us. We just have to be aware of them. And that's what we see from Yosef in this week's Parsha, and that's the Yisod of Chanukah. I just want to share one more thought before we wrap up here. And that's the following idea. Why didn't the brothers recognize Yosef? Right? That's the question we're dealing with. And when you read the Parsha, when you go through it, it almost jumps off at you. It jumps off the page at you. How obvious. He's making all these hints. Oh, is your father alive? How many are you? Oh, they're like, when we're reading it, it's like, oh, come on. Like, brothers, wake up. Open your eyes. It's Yosef. But they didn't pick it up. Why not? Why not?
Because Yosef had changed and they had him. They hadn't realized their change.
Okay.
They weren't on his level, so they weren't on the same page.
Okay, so I want to tweak that a little bit. Right, Yosef had changed. Rashi says he had a beard. Right, if you guys ever watch, like, or read Superman, right, like, Clark Kent had glasses and now he doesn't. All of a sudden, oh my gosh, it's a totally different person. Is the beard really that convincing? If I came back after break, we're about to go, we have 5 minutes left of shiur until vacation.
If I
came without a beard on, would you guys recognize me?
No.
If I wasn't wearing a mask, you guys probably would recognize me.
I guarantee I would not recognize you.
All right, so we're gonna have to test that thesis then. But the Or Chaim HaKadosh says it wasn't just the beard. It wasn't just the beard. But they had sold Yosef into slavery. When you think of someone as a slave, you don't think of him as second in command to the most powerful country in the entire world. They didn't expect the person standing in front of them to be saying certain things. So when he said those things, it wasn't on their radar. They didn't think about it. And I think that's an incredibly important idea, that sometimes we look at someone and we expect them to fit the role or fit the label that or the box that we've placed them in. And sometimes people tell us certain things and we assume, oh, this guy is to this, he's to that, he's to the right, he's to the left, he's to the yeshivish, he's to this. And we miss his message because we're not thinking about the words he's saying. We've totally labeled him and put him in a certain box. And because we do that, we sometimes miss the message because we're focusing on the wrong things. We have to be able to look at a person. Our perception of a person shapes the message. And I think we have to make sure the musr, the lekach, the takeaway for us is to make sure we're not putting people in boxes. To make sure that we're seeing the entire person. To make sure that our perception of people is not too narrow. That we give people a chance. We try to understand people. And when you try to understand others, the messages that they're giving us, that they're teaching us, can resonate that much more. Okay, I think those are three ideas. Let's just quickly summarize for a second before the bell rings. We have Rav Soloveitchik. Yosef recognized them twice. He first thought they were the same older brothers. Then he realized that they had changed, but he wanted to bring that transformation to their attention. He wanted to make sure that they know that they're different. And sometimes that's what our teachers, our rebbeim, our friends, our parents, our siblings are doing to us. Idea number two is this Rabbi Lam idea, that we have to be aware of the miracles that are happening in our lives. Yosef had gone through it, the brothers had not, so they weren't able to appreciate it. And that's what we're learning from the Hanukkah candles. By Amim Ahim Bazman Azam, Hashem is constantly performing miracles for the Jewish people. We have to open our eyes and be aware of that. And the last idea, the brothers didn't recognize Yosef. Why? Because they had a certain perception of the person standing in front of him, and that person could not be Yosef. This person can't be the person that is helping me, because this person is to that or to this. Or he's my friend, and we're just buddies, and he can't be helping me out on a fundamental level. Right? We have to be able to see people in a much broader way, to not put them in boxes, to not label them, so that they can really help us out. We can see people for who they are, and not just how we perceive them. Shkoyach, I hope you guys have a fantastic break, a great Shabbos. And let's remember our tefillin selfies every single day. And you guys are great. Have a great Shabbos.